Welcome to the Space Show, Tim.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
We're in a corner of the Off the Planet exhibition at ScienceWorks, and I see that there's a very ancient-looking telescope here. Could you tell us a little bit about it, please, Tim?
Sure, Andrew. This is a replica of Galileo Galilei's refractor telescope. I suppose pirates also use refractor telescopes. That's the one that's well known to everyone as basically having a couple of lens that mean that you get a magnification power of about 30. I think what makes this interesting is that although it's only a replica, it gives you an idea of I suppose the focal length and the simplicity of the telescope or the instrument that more or less put astronomy in confrontation with religion and all of the ideas, I suppose, that led to perhaps a Renaissance. The idea of the Earth, in fact, being the centre of the universe was turned on its head by this very simple telescope. The moons of Jupiter and, I suppose, the phases of Venus meant that Galileo started to question the orthodoxy. This telescope meant that suddenly he was aware that there were, you know, satellites of other planets and possibly, you know, the orthodoxy of everything going around the Earth was no longer tenable.
What's it made of? It looks like leather.
It has a leather trim, which, and I can't tell you about the core, but I imagine it's, you know, maybe has a wooden core. And of course, the gold leaf embossing on the leather, that's pretty obvious. That's entirely decorative. These were, there was a number of them, obviously, around in the early 1600s, but they were very much a rich person's toy. And I don't think Galileo was, in fact, the first person to use it, but he certainly was the first one to put it to good effect. And you know, to actually have a very structured, you know, viewing of the same object night after night, and you know, together with all his notes and so forth, he realised that there was all sorts of events that were happening out there that just weren't visible to the human eye. And you can imagine just how exciting it was when they had telescopic viewing nights available for all and sundry, and everyone, of course, could share in the excitement of, you know, Jupiter having satellites just like the Earth, and, you know, presumably looking at mountains on the Moon. You know, previously the Moon was rather flat, and you know, although there was changes of texture and colour and so forth, suddenly at the Terminator line you could see very, very steep, you know, craters and mountains, suggesting that there was a very interesting topography. You know, it possibly it had a you know, volcanic or, you know, rather catastrophic, you know, origin, something totally different to the Earth, of course. Yeah, anyway, that's Galileo's telescope.
And alongside it here, you've got a pair of modern binoculars. How would the view through those compare with the view through Galileo's older telescope?
That's a very good question, Andrew, and I think they probably correspond. The binoculars were placed in the case to remind people that you don't need to spend hundreds of dollars to get a good view. A pair of simple binoculars, such as a bird watcher or someone who goes to the races regularly would have in their cupboard, would be all you need to have a look at the moons of Jupiter. When I say the moons of Jupiter, we're talking about the four largest moons. I know Jupiter's got a dozen more that you probably would need a larger telescope for, but those four large moons that change their position on a nightly or a daily basis mean that anyone could probably simulate or replicate Galileo's discovery on any particular night. So, you know, alongside all the other larger refractors and reflectors, the humble binoculars mean that even the backyarder can have the thrill and excitement of astronomy.
And for anyone who likes brass work, there are two magnificent specimens here. What are these, Tim?
We're looking at a 19th century, I think it's a dual-purpose telescope. It actually worked as a surveyor's theodolite, and you can see there that the way it can move, it could also work as a an alt azimuth mount telescope, and that meant that it could actually be used to sort of follow and track stars that cross the meridian, and could be used, I suppose, to make rather precise measurements of time. I think initially the Melbourne telescope was set up with a mount such as this, so that it could track any star that was going to cross the meridian, and very precise measurements could be made as to, you know, the sidereal day. And anyway, that's that brass telescope. The other one over the other side is a modern reflector, and these obviously pack a fair punch. They're not too expensive for the amateur astronomer. People who have one probably know for a few hundred dollars. They're sometimes referred to as Newtonians, because Sir Isaac himself is apparently credited with inventing the mirror as a superior way of gathering light, and they were lighter and probably cheaper, you know, to manufacture. So there's a reflector there, and the other one, of course, is works on lens, so it's a refractor. That's essentially the difference, as I understand it. Refractors using glass lens, and reflectors using a mirror.
And over here we've got some other objects which at first sight from a distance look just like telescopes, but hey, these are actually rockets. The caption says Australian rockets. What's the story here, Tim?
These are actually the only two surviving rockets that we used late in the 50s for sounding purposes. They basically went up into the upper atmosphere and took all sorts of, I suppose, measurements of temperature and radiation, and apparently sometimes measured ozone content. They also were basically practical telemetry experiments. You're able to basically practice following and tracking and sending presumably some small amount of signal, and some sort of correction was capable. So there was a sort of a very simplistic telemetry purpose to it all too. We put a halt to all of that early in the 60s, and I think the Americans packed up and left the Woomera rocket range, and apparently they decided to concentrate more on sending rockets up from home, from Cape Canaveral and places like that. But they did actually give us, as a small consolation for this whole experience, shared experience, they gave us a little cargo position on one of their rockets that enables to launch this satellite that's directly over your head, Andrew. This is the Australis Oscar 5 satellite. It's the last satellite that we actually launched into space back in the, I think it was 1971. And this is a prototype. The one that actually is, that was launched is still up there, travelling around in a very stable orbit. Apparently it'll be up there for another 400 or 500 years. And once again, it only had a transmission time of weeks. It had primitive batteries. I think they were actually lead batteries. It didn't have any solar cells. And you can see they're coming away from the actual box, and that's all it is. It's nothing special, not a chrome dome or anything like that. Some steel rule. There was a sponsorship deal with Stanley Tools to provide the antennae, and they provided the group from Melbourne University, one of the engineering students of which was Richard Tonkin. He came here for the opening. And he was
Richard, of course, is very well known to our listeners because he's the one who provides our space show news every week.
Is that right? Oh, well, Richard was very, very chuffed to see his prototype now on display here in Melbourne. It's been up in Sydney for quite a long time at the powerhouse, but you can see here the steel rule projecting in three directions, acting as some sort of antennae. And I believe that Stanley, when they provided the steel rule for Richard, they were instructed to basically provide plain steel rule, but they came printed with all the numbers. All the imperial or metric measurements were marked in. So there you are, flying around the Earth at a distance of some hundreds of kilometres above the planet now is some stainless steel rules on a box.
Now, behind us is a photograph of a rocket launching RESAT. Now, I know that the Museum of Victoria does have a model of RESAT. It's not on display. Why not?
I'm not sure whether we do have a model, and if we do, it's probably only a very small model, and it could be locked away in a very dark cupboard, Andrew. I have to confess to not knowing the whereabouts of it, so a bit disappointing for you, and I'll have to make some more inquiries.
Okay, then. And right over here we go into the age of our moon travel, and an Apollo Command Module? Not full size, though.
No, just a one-third size, but it does give you an idea of how cosy and friendly the conditions were for the three astronauts. And these three astronauts are probably very well known, Collins, Armstrong and Aldrin. You can see them strapped into their descent mode seats. And the model itself, as we look at it, is about 1.2 metres across, or just about 4 feet, I suppose. So that means that we're looking at something that was only about 3 or 4 metres across in real life. And it gives you an idea, I suppose, of how small a payload actually went to the moon and back. All the other components of the 110-metre Saturn V rocket were wasted in space or left behind on the moon or ejected into some sort of orbit or fell back to Earth. Of the 110 metres of Saturn V, only 3 metres of actual container made the trip all the way back. And there's a lovely mural behind there showing you the presumably the view that you might get looking through the window if you had the opportunity to look out the window, that is, as you re-entered the Earth's atmosphere at about 25,000 kilometres an hour. Pretty quick.
Yes, I'm feeling quite high up at this moment looking at that, and it really does make you feel like you are in space.
Yes, it's a lovely piece of work, and Dave Thomas actually did all our murals, and he painted this one from drawings, or photographs I should say, from NASA, images that NASA have in the public domain, and you can just see the curve of the Earth, and that little bit of blue haze right on the horizon there is all the what you might say useful part of the atmosphere, the part of the atmosphere that we breathe. And then of course it's a very very thin envelope around the planet itself, and the rest of the atmosphere is so thin that it's not able to actually make the sky look blue. You don't have to go very high before the sky goes black, and even in the daytime the sky apparently is starlit and black, and it would be rather interesting to have cameras on a rocket as it ascended or descended through the atmosphere.
And speaking of cameras, over here we've got some photographs from the space program, some of them going way very back.
Yes, these are now almost ancient history. The first 5 years of American space history, dating from 1958, and you'll see just further along there Explorer, or is it Vanguard? It's the Vanguard satellite. This was the American equivalent of Sputnik, and it has the same basic shape. I don't know whether that was by design or whether in fact one of those spherical satellites was in fact superior to any other shape. There's no aerodynamic need to have a spherical satellite, but it looks very much like Sputnik with a plate attached underneath. And it took the Americans a lot longer, of course, to actually simulate what the Russians did, and eventually, of course, I suppose you'd say that they exceeded the Russian achievements because they got to the moon. But this photo here, America's first astronauts, if you have a look at their spacesuits, they almost look like as if they're a set, from a movie set for an early space or a science fiction film. The boots are different colours to the rest of the outfit. They're not integrated. They're actually they just look like a pair of hiking boots or probably a pair of pilot's boots. The whole suit wasn't capable of being pressurised to the degree that the modern suits are. But there's the famous seven. I think these are the people that they talked about as being made of the right stuff. They certainly were pushing ahead into the unknown.
Well, there's plenty more to see here at the Off the Planet exhibition at ScienceWorks, but thank you for joining us tonight in the Space Show.
My pleasure, Andrew. Thank you.